Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Today is an episode I'm wildly excited about. I'm still astonished I managed to get the opportunity to speak to these two incredible individuals. Today I talk to Brandon and Tilly, the lead singer and guitarist of the fifth wave emo band Home Is Where, to discuss their latest album, The Wailer, a collection of harsh, vulnerable, brazen anthems reckoning with a world that's burning. It was also my favorite album of the entire year, so I couldn't think of a better way to close out the year than with a conversation like this. Hope you enjoy. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. Hi, Tilly.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Hi, Izzy. Nice to meet you as well.
It's like our third is connecting to audio.
Yep.
Hello, hello.
Sorry, hold on. Okay, here we go. Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Hi, Brandon.
Good.
Hi, Tilly.
Well, I guess we can like start with some pleasantries. How's y'all's Thursday been?
You want to go first?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll go first. It's been all right. I just got done cleaning the house and eating dinner. How was your Thursday?
It was pretty good. I just logged off work an hour ago and went to the grocery store. Very mundane, honestly. What about you, Tilly?
I went to the grocery store, and then I've made about three pots of coffee, and I haven't really done anything productive about that, but I've been drinking them. And it's my first week in Portland, too, Oregon. I live here now, so it's fun. I'm getting used to it. It's beautiful.
Big step. Yeah, I bet. Where in Portland?
Southeast.
Nice. When did you finalize the move? How long have you been settled?
Yeah, drove there, started the drive on the 5th, and then drove here 7 days with me and my best friend just got like engaged. So they flew over to New York, and then we drove from New York over to Portland across 7 days. It was great.
Nice. Congrats on the engagement.
It's wonderful. I'm very, very engaged. Very happy about it.
I'm happy for you. Well, like, for starters, I'm, like, really thrilled that you agreed to come and chat with me. I've been listening to Home Is Where since the EP. And you know what's really funny is one of my best friends texted me and she kept saying to her girlfriend, I became birds, and her girlfriend kept thinking she was saying Ken Burns.
Oh, that's funny. I want a Ken Burns documentary about emo.
You and me both, honestly.
Hit me up, Kenny.
And I mean, that's a great segue into a talking point. Like, I love the way that your band approaches emo. Like, where do you stand on like emo as a label, essentially, at this juncture? Because it's just like a single word with so much like baggage behind it.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, emo is just like rock music, and that's like where I go to it with like the mindset of is that it's just like, you know, it's just like rock and roll, you know. And that's like, I don't know, it's like simple. Like, it's like it's like fun to like look into genres and like, you know, do little time markers and like put them as waves and stuff. But like, I don't think we think about that. I think about that when I'm like consuming it, like when I'm looking for something or trying to talk about like something, whether it's like a certain scene or like a certain sound. But like when we make our music, we don't really think in terms of like we're gonna have like a Midwest screamo part here or something like that. Like what it, we just kind of, I don't know. I don't think that even comes across our minds really at all, like genre or anything like that too much. It's fun, you know, it helps me, you know, find music and stuff, because you know, if you like got like, I checked out emo because I like Captain Jazz so much, and I was like, well, this band's really good, what other kind of bands sound like this or will give me like the same feeling as this band does did, and that's, you know, now we're here.
Yeah, definitely. And what you said about like not thinking about that necessarily, like when you're writing, that makes a lot of sense, because it feels like in a sense you're going through the process of being like, oh, there's something that I have, there's something I'm feeling that needs to come out, and I'm not thinking about like, I want it to sound like this, or I want to imitate this person because I like how they sound or whatever. But that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think from a sonic perspective, not necessarily similarly a lyrical perspective, but using the label or like the term emo as a genre now, to sort of piggyback off of what Brandon said earlier about how it's just kind of rock music. The same types of people who call themselves emo that are like pushing the envelope in terms of like just like what that genre can sound like sonically are, it's the same kind of pushing the envelope that rock music did in like the 50s and 60s. I mean, that's at least how I think of it, from especially from a guitar perspective, where, you know, trying out different effects and different styles and can be comparable to how people are putting, you know, Game Boys and things in some emo music these days, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm also curious to ask, like, what are your personal feelings on writing as a daily practice versus when the mood strikes? I feel like when I talk to songwriters, they often fall into the latter category. So where does Home Is Where sort of fall into that?
I'm always writing. Like, I have a pretty like one track mind. It's so when I have, you know, and I always have like an idea about something, you know, so I'm like always writing in my head, you know, putting words together or like thinking about ideas or whatever, you know, like if I'm just like standing quiet in a room, I'm more than likely like thinking about, you know, like a phrase or something that I'm like putting words in or trying to think about how it can correlate with other stuff or whatever. And it's like, you know, that's kind of how, but you know, what's the inspiration part is important, because that's when like the good stuff comes out. Like as hard as I try to put stuff together in my head almost constantly, it's never anything really worth exploring too much. It's more like exercises or something, or a door that goes into another room or something. So this is kind of where we're at, you know. It takes a long time for me to feel like a song is good for the most part. It takes a while for it to feel like I can bring it to Tilly. I mean, like, this is it. And yeah. And then, yeah, Tilly, what about you?
Well, I think in regards to sort of ours, specifically us as songwriters, it is a lot of inspiration strikes, though I do feel that I'm a music teacher as my profession, so because of that I'm constantly, you know, hearing different songs and chord progressions and thinking about like, you know, formulaically how does this all work, and like I have to pick up a guitar every 24 hours as a means of income. Therefore, I try to separate the idea of formula in writing, and more so find inspiration specifically in the times that I'm not holding an instrument, and then those experiences and just living, being an alive person doing things, should enable you to bring like a more personal and kind of fresh perspective on what you're going to make musically. Cause I could play a G and a C chord all day. I could even make it a C major 7, you know, and really make it sound Midwest or whatever. But like that, it absolutely doesn't matter if there isn't intention and some kind of compassion behind it. Yeah. So it is a lot of inspiration strikes. And then when Brandon and I get together, in some ways it's been a bit of a monumental task where it's like, okay, inspiration strikes right now, book a plane ticket, be here next weekend, and we're going to spend the next couple of days, you know, just writing. It can be that sort of spur of the moment. And yeah, you got to get it while it's hot for sure.
Mm-hmm. What about when it feels like you're just sort of clawing for that inspiration to come to you and you feel like you're hitting a wall? Like when you have those moments, like what do you find like helps you sort of break out of that mindset?
I stop playing music and then I go do something else. But Brandon?
I don't ever really come across that because I'm always working on something and I'm like, you know, going into it just like, you know, hoping that something comes out. So every time to me, something doesn't come out, it's hitting a wall, you know, and like, I don't know if that's like unhealthy or whatever, but like, so the wall, whatever, you know, whatever, but I don't think about it like that because it's like, oh, it'll, you know, it'll come. There's no, I don't really see a wall, if that makes any sense.
Right, right. Also, like when you write, like when everyone writes, they're always writing what they know. Like lived experiences will always inform the way that something sounds and the sentiment behind the music. So that's always inevitable. Would you like to talk a little bit about how each of your personal experiences have become foundational to your art?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Our music's kind of fucked up. I think all of us have had something crazy happen, you know, that kind of just like sticks around like a dark cloud over your head or whatever. And we channel that too, but I guess, you know, we do make kind of overtly like negative feeling music or music that kind of speaks to like a negative feeling place. And I guess, yeah, like, you know, a lot of stuff goes into the songs and stuff. I just never thought of it like that, you know. I don't know how I really thought. It just kind of, the songs just kind of like happen. A lot of them kind of happen like almost like magically. Like, you know, sometimes it feels like I just kind of like wake up and have like a finished song. Whereas like other ones, you know, you just kind of labor over and over until, you know, something that makes sense comes out. And maybe it doesn't make sense because it's not speaking to us, you know, what I know or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't ever sing like, yeah, I guess I sing about what I know, you know. I would never sing about, you know, like, you know, like growing up in like England or something, you know. I don't have that perspective. Yeah. Tilly, does that affect you? Do you think about that with riffs? With riffs?
With an instrumental sort of perspective. In some ways, yeah. I mean, because, you know, same as lyrics, sound can evoke emotion and sort of feeling. And there's certainly, like, with things that we've been more recently writing, there's experiences, though they're... It is kind of a tricky one because there are experiences, but never really thinking about them as like, ah, yes, this will be great research for my.
Yeah,
next
I'm not like, yeah, I'm not like thing, content right, farming. You know? Yeah,
you know, it does just kind of, you know, you focus your memories and thoughts with your intention of writing, and you know, you can pluck. I'd say we've both lived lives. I'd say everybody in the band has lived and will continue living full life
for now.
But I think I see, I get what you're saying in regards to, you know, like you'll see an artist. That's why some of the best emo bands don't even have more than like hard cap at 3 albums, you know, is like they run out of things to like, or you just get older and your later material isn't as good anymore because, you know, it's a little bit more sheltered per se, or that's not everybody's, you know, approach, of course, but I find that to be is something that occurs with frequency. But I don't know, I never, like, for example, we travel with the touring and stuff, and traveling is a big part of my life. I don't often get the opportunity to sit still. So, but it's never the, like, it's never like the tour that I think brings us like experience. It's more the people that we're around. I find a lot of experience in life, and what we do is through meeting and talking with other people. It's not necessarily like, you know, it's more those shared experiences with other folks are a lot more impactful, I believe, than it, or easier to find and more impactful than it can be to, like, I don't know, go on a hike by yourself or experience something very traumatic, or, you know, live a whole, I don't know, whole life as like a bank robber or something like that. You know, so, but yeah, I think communicating with our friends and people all abroad and sharing experiences, like sharing our experiences and hearing other people's experiences aids in sort of the web of, like, I don't know, that goes into your, like, creative conscious as well.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I feel like what I really love about The Wailer is how, like, for the most part, yes, it does sound like you're marveling at the fact that any of us on this earth have survived this long, but there's also like those like other parts where it's like it's dynamic. But what would you say sort of spawned the seed of that record as a whole?
Yeah, it kind of was more like piecemeal together at first, and then I got the idea for the concept, you know, the story for it, and then like rewrote a lot of things that I was working on, and then added, you know, and then that, with having that prompt, makes it easier if you have something to like fall back on, you know, to help flesh the song out. And that basically started, that happened right after like Birds came out, or like right before Birds came out, and I think I started writing the words for it, and no, it had to be after, but pretty like shortly after. And I don't, there's just a lot going on at that time that led to some, you know, some dark moments or whatever, you know. And and then out of that, you know, I coped with it by, you know, trying to write the words to this and writing the music with Tilly and stuff, and you know, read a couple books and got inspired by a couple records and stuff. But yeah, you know, it's, I can't exactly, if it was anything specific that really kind of triggered it, it just was like always kind of writing itself, and then it became like, and then it revealed itself, so the only thing left to do was just kind of finish it and like fine-tune it and finish it.
Was there ever any point in the middle of the writing process when you didn't have all of these songs before you decided on the direction of what the album's concept was going to be, or were the songs all pretty much like done?
When we started writing the music, at the very least, I think after, well, I guess after we wrote Skin Meadow, that's when that kind of, yeah, because that was the first one we wrote. We started playing that on the Glass Beach tour, I think. And but basically right after that tour is when the idea kind of like solidified itself. And it's kind of, it was something I'd been thinking about here and there for like a couple of years, but just didn't know like what to do with it. And then what was coming out was kind of like fitting with all these ideas that I wanted to express with that arc or whatever. And yeah, so it just happened. And you know, this is, we went through a lot of different versions of the music for this. And I guess the words too, the words changed just as much as the music too. It took a while for it to feel right, you know. I guess, well, that's how it has been, other than kind of recently with the stuff we're working on now, which is nice. But yeah, before it's all just kind of like trial and error, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. But I knew what the story had to be pretty early on. It was just a matter of figuring out how to express it. That took a minute.
Yeah, this Whaler was a lot more, I'd say, maximal in terms of instrumentation and different dynamics of quiet, loud, and swells and things like that. At least there was just simply more track time to be able to, you know, play around with that kind of thing. So, yeah, I just wanted to provide that. I lost track. Sorry.
You're good. Yeah. I'm like, another thing that I think is really cool to witness now, to like pivot back to the emo of it all, is that a majority of the audience demographic, being femme, queer people, POC, who were mostly just relegated to the audience like 30 plus years ago. When it comes to emo, what I really love seeing now is that a lot of women, POC, trans people, and just like basically so many people who were relegated to the sidelines or just to the audience for so long are finally like claiming that space of like the stage and such. How do y'all like feel about seeing how that's sort of progressing right now?
Attila, you want to take this one first?
Sure. Yeah. I think it's badass. It's cool. Because not only you get other people's perspectives too. Cause it's not just like, you know, like if we're to take this comparison of like a white dude emo band of all white dudes, you know, you're going to get a rather limited perspective lyrically, you know, the lived experience we were talking about earlier, you know, those people sharing their lived experiences might not reflect everybody, especially, you know, also like everybody who listened to them. Like, there's plenty of people who grew up listening to bands like that, that are those people themselves, super diverse and super amazing musicians or creators of something, you know, now it rules. It's also really cool to see the like women, POC, trans, like anybody like marginalized also in like some of my favorite, at least I'd say some of our favorite for sure, but like front of house engineers and like lights people and like crew that we've worked with are also like femme or POC or trans or whatever. And it's just like, I don't know. It's cool to see it. The music is great. The perspective is great. It's just cool to see marginalized people in positions of power. Like, that's the main thing that really, you know, really, really kicks ass about this whole operation.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add?
Not really.
Not really?
It's cool. Like, I'm pretty cynical. So I just always think it's like, you know, it's just more work that needs to be done and stuff. It's nice to see it more out and about, but also it's like one of those things where it's like it's kind of always been there, but it's, you know, it's more, I don't know what to say. It's like, it's easier to talk about it now, maybe. I don't know. But I think it's rad, you know? And I think that all the, you know, good artists making music right now, you know, happen to be like trans folks or queer in some way or whatever. It's, you know, they just, I just think like, you know, it's cool to see it, you know, we're taking steps, but I want more selfishly and empathetically, you know, 'cause there's only like a couple big people, you know, that are like trans or whatever. Like, it's not that many. I mean, it's more than there was like, you know, like 20, 40 years ago, but you know, there's a lot more trans people out there or like queer people or, you know, making art that's miles ahead of, you know, the normal counterpart or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't mean to get up my own ass about it too much or whatever, but you know, it's rad.
Right.
I want to add to that as well, is it is genuinely rad. And to piggyback with what Brandon said of, you know, more, there's, you know, traveling and stuff, you get to see beautiful epicenters of that creative output by marginalized people, and you get to see it in places like New York City, or, you know, even on the Pacific Northwest, you know, Portland and all that. It's very, very friendly to all types of folk. But you don't see that in a lot of towns still, like small towns, you know. And some of the just absolute greatest music is being made by some like trans kid or in the middle of nowhere in like Colorado or like Arizona or like Florida, like just in the middle of nowhere. And like that's the shit that should be heard more, because like I said, there are these beautiful communities in these areas that are able to support it, and that's wonderful. But some of those places are thousands of miles away from marginalized people who, like, it would be fucking awesome if that existed, or even if they ever got to see it, you know. I have a lot of feelings on that, having moved from Florida recently, from Florida over onto Brooklyn for a couple months, and I got to see something that was just I'd never seen before. It was beautiful to see that many people, you know, like me, trans femme, like in a space. It's just absolutely crazy. And to see those folks just like dominating the punk scene there, it's wonderful. But I would have never seen that in Florida, you know, in Jacksonville, or
it's dangerous
places like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just can't, you know, you can't be. But like, just to say, in the terms of we need more of that, we need more of that, and we need it specifically from, you know, like small places, you know, like really, really paying attention to the people's voices, not just in the large sort of cultural epicenters, but like literally everywhere, mm-hmm. every house, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And even in like New York or any other major city on the coast, like there are still like certain dangerous outside influences that could harm marginalized people as well. Like I've witnessed it myself in these spaces, going to shows a lot. And I understand the cynicism for sure of like being like, it's not enough, more please. And yeah, and people being like, oh, look, we got one mainstream marginalized celebrity. We fixed it, guys. And it's like, do you hear yourself right now? But yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I also, a funny thing that the very beginning of every day is like 9/11, when you just like open it, like just screaming, feed yourself, like, because like saying that to someone, like it doesn't sound threatening, like if you just say like feed yourself, but doing it in an unhinged scream and hearing that, do you know what that reminded me of?
What did it remind you of?
It reminded me of, have you guys seen Bottoms, the movie Bottoms?
No, but I've been meaning to.
So there's this one scene in that movie where a character named Sylvie, who's the one kid in the high school who's like really crazy and is like huffing paint all the time and stuff like that. there's some one scene where like the fight club that the high school girls form, they're like, okay, let's do this, rad. And there's a little bit of applauding. And then completely unprovoked, this character Sylvie just starts screaming, yes, queen, slay! Yes, slay! And everyone's just like, and I'm just like, I just found that so funny, because like when any straight cis girl utters those words, that's kind of like what they sound like, honestly. It's not that far off. That's kind of how obnoxious it feels. But yeah.
There's like, that's like the secret message in all of our songs is actually slay queen. That's what we're trying to get across to the audience. Most of the, all of our songs, you know, not literally, but they all end with have a good night and slay queen.
Yep. Love it. And
I know that, Tilly, you're like in the Pacific Northwest now. Brandon, where are you currently based right now?
Parts unknown. I'm out of Florida. I'll say that much. But yeah, I'm in a spot where it's, you know, a little bit, you know, nicer, you know, to where, you know, there's cities nearby I can go in and like feel comfortable presenting as femme or whatever. But like where I'm at right now, doesn't feel much too different than Florida did in terms of that kind of, you know, trans stuff. Mm. But, you know, I'm getting by.
Yeah, so was the band, like, all together originally based in Florida, too?
Yeah.
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 So I'm just curious if there are any local bands in Florida that you, like, when you were, like, grinding and, like, starting out as a band, that you had never gotten to play a show with but wish you could have.
I played with everybody. But there's not much of a scene in the northeast of Florida. I mean, there is a scene, but it's like all comprised of like the same people, more or less, you know, kind of like, you know, like everybody, it's kind of like everybody kind of like inbreeds bands with each other. And so I play with a lot of people I wanted to play with, but yeah. What about Tilly? Is there anyone you did? Cause you did way more overall Florida shows than I did. What is there anyone you're missing out on?
There were a lot of great bands in the southeast of Florida, and especially like Miami, Fort Lauderdale area, that I never really got around to. You know, some of them are still really active right now, but not any to name. I feel pretty happy with all the folks I got to play with. You know, it's been some fun times, especially in different spheres, different genres. You know, folk punk playing in like a hotel lobby to like, you know, to then more proper venues and for emo bands and stuff. Good times. You don't see a lot of touring folks, so a lot of the locals play.
Yeah, that's the thing is, yeah.
You know, not yeah, a lot exactly. of people tour. You might get a band from Savannah, Georgia, or maybe Atlanta, if they're doing Atlanta, Savannah, Jacksonville, you know, or something like that. But yeah, we'll say a band that I just absolutely love that I never got to play a proper show with. They're still around, though, and that's Surrounder from Pensacola. One of the absolute, just bar none, incredible band. Very, very mathy, very emo. But like really shows that lived experience. It's not polished. It's not, it's not what you'd think of math sort of things. It's them yelling and screaming and counting to 15 and then like a very, very like fuzzy bass. It's just wonderful. Yeah.
But, yeah. I want to play a show with Chris Gaulin again.
Damn.
We got to play a show with Chris Gaulin.
That'd be cool. That's the way.
Speaking of folks you have played with, when you guys played elsewhere, my friend Tim, who's in the band Pop Music Fever Dream, opened. That was a show I was out of town for, and I was so bummed to miss. So I am definitely going to be pulling up when you return, for sure.
Yeah, it won't be too far now. It won't be too far away. That was a smelly show. My God. That was one of the smelliest elsewhere, shows we ever played.
People went hard that night.
Yeah, that was crazy.
PMFT, great band. I asked them to be on that one.
Birthday cake everywhere. It was nuts. What a dumb night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People fall in love at our shows. I can't tell you how many times I've had somebody come up to us when we're at like the merch table or when we're like out front or packing up or something. Or somebody's like, "Yeah, me and my partner met at the last time y'all rolled around here or something." And I'm like, "What? I don't know what's in the air, but love is in the air at the Home Is Where gig, I suppose."
Also wanted to ask another just follow-up that popped into my head when you mentioned your ideal emo Ken Burns documentary. You know how in every music doc there's always that one rock star who's like the default talking head, like the camera's favorite. Who's your pick for your hypothetical Ken Burns emo documentary?
Manny Pacquiao. I think he would do a great job.
Nice. I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's a boxer from from, I don't remember where he's from, but he's, you know, he's from somewhere else, and he's a very, very good fighter professionally. He has absolutely nothing to do with emo. I don't know if he even knows. I don't know what kind of music Manny's into at all. But, you know, I would take, you know, he's got like a warrior's wisdom that like is desperately needed in music documentaries, you know. So, yeah, that he would be my talking point. But nice. Head-to-head, yeah.
Warrior's wisdom. I like that. All right. Well, I have one more question for each of you individually. And that is, say there's a kid who is hoping for something to like cling on to, like community and stuff or whatever. What would you say to them?
It's a huge question. One moment.
Should I play hold music?
Yeah. I'd be like, listen, kid, I don't know how I got in your house, but I need some change for the bus because I got to get out of here. And then I would promptly leave and hope for the best. You know, I would be very nice, you know, I'm taking some money from a child. But yeah, you know, yeah, that's the best I can do. I don't have the answers. You know, Tilly, do you have the answers or do you need bus fare?
I think kind of like a little bit of both. But I'll say, coming from a small town in South Florida where there wasn't much of a scene, you know, one thing that really influenced me was being able to see performances on the internet of bands, you know, seeing live performances and things like that. I think being able to have, I don't know necessarily what I'd say, but what I'd give to, you know, like what's the dude's name? Give these kids like a Hate56 Patreon subscription, you know, just let them see all of these incredible live videos of bands and see that that's possible. You know, a lot of people don't get the opportunity to even see what's possible, you know, and if you get to see that, maybe that'll spark, you know, it's something, it's something more, there's more out there, you know, so it's something like that. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I love that. A Hate56 Patreon subscription is definitely something that I would love to be given.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you both once again for agreeing to come on. I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you both. And
oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, you asked some great questions, and it was good to ponder. Nice ponder with you.
I just feel so bad for anyone who has to interview us, as we go on these tangents, and you know, it's a lot. You know, so you're doing the Lord's work. You're doing good work at the very least. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. So, well, yeah, peace and love. And Slay Queen signing off.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you to Home Is Where for joining me. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.